One of my favorite birds that I've hardly ever seen in my life is Smith's longspur. You can count on the fingers of one hand without using the thumb or index finger the number of times I've seen this tundra nesting species. You'd need a lot of fingers to count the number I tried for but missed. I got my lifer with my friend Paula in Arkansas in January 2006 at the Stuttgart Municipal Airport, which is the birding spot for birders throughout North America to add this species quickly and easily every winter. We entered the office, they saw our binoculars, sent us to a sign-in sheet, and told us to get off the runway if we heard a plane coming. My 2006 photos were exceptionally crappy, but oh well, they were the best I had, and they showed my lifer. Smith's longspurs are regular in a few grassland areas in western Minnesota in mid-October, and may appear rarely in Duluth and along the North Shore in spring and fall. When I wrote my field guide to the birds of Minnesota for the American Birding Association, I was limited to 300 species, but I made sure to include this one, not just because it is regular, but it's fairly predictable and gettable. Back on October 6, 2017, I saw one briefly but didn't get photos at the old Stella Jones Pier in Duluth. Then this year, on September 17th, I heard there were a couple at the McQuaid Road Safe Harbor, just a few miles up the shore. So Russ and I went there in late afternoon, and voila, I finally got some reasonable pictures of this elusive but fascinating bird. In autumn, Smith's longspur is fairly nondescript, but it is indeed fascinating. Smith's longspur is polygynandrous. Rather than forming pairs at all, each female associates and copulates with two or three males to produce a single clutch of eggs. And each male associates and copulates with two or more females. Over a period of 1 week in the early spring, a female longspur will copulate over 350 times on average. This is one of the highest rates of any bird. The males are each trying to ensure that their sperm will displace the sperm of each of their mates' other mates. To accomplish this, the testes of Smith's longspurs are about double the mass of those of the closely related but monogamous Lapland longspur. Once chicks hatch, two or more males may assist each female in caring for her nestlings. The amount of care provided by each male depends on the number of young he has sired within that nest. No one understands how the system, so different from other longspurs, arose in the first place. Two exceptionally calm, cooperative Smith's longspurs were at the McQuaid Landing Thursday and Friday, hanging out with several Lapland longspurs. A merlin looking for lunch flew over and one of them ran to a rock on which a birder was sitting. It crouched down between the rock and the man's boot. I didn't react in time to get a photo of that. Smith's longspurs are sparrow-sized and colored, blending in with the grass and weeds, but I got a lot of photos. I'd of course love to get pictures of them in their striking breeding plumage, but their soft winter appearance is quite lovely in its own way. When Russ and I got there, even as we could see the three birders who arrived before we did taking pictures, we got distracted by an unusually cooperative American golden plover and a pectoral sandpiper. I didn't spend too much time with them before I headed for the longspurs. We spent over a half hour standing in one spot, looking at and photographing longspurs before we started home, getting distracted all over again by the plover and sandpiper. Like the other birders at the McQuaid Landing, the plover and sandpiper stayed socially distanced from us, so all was well on a jolly afternoon. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.
Thank you.